Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Bill Buckmaster Show on AM 1030 KVOI. I'm Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. I'm sitting in for Bill, who's on a much-deserved vacation this week. And joining us on the live line is Councilman Steve Kozacik. And we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on with the city and probably dig into some burning local issues. And are you there, Steve?
Yep, sure am. How are you doing, Dylan?
Great, great. Lately, after many, many decades, Broadway is again making news. The widening of Broadway, how we're going to go about that, if we're going to go about that. The city council recently voted 5-1 to move forward with a plan that you were voted against. Why did you cast that vote?
Well, let me make a couple of points. First of all, you're correct. This has been going on for decades, and so my sense is that, given that it's been going on for decades, why is it that we, 30 years after this began, became an issue? Why is it that we are the ones who are alleged to be the ones holding up the final decision? An argument can certainly be made that one of the reasons this has gone on for so long is that it's been a bad idea for so long. The traffic counts on which the RTA based their original decision have been flawed since day one. People are not driving as much as they used to. The need for the road expansion is demonstrably not there. And the reason I say demonstrably is because even Chuck Huckleberry and the RTA folks about 2 years ago, after some haranguing between me and them, admitted that what was originally on the ballot in 2006 was a real overreach. It was a 150-foot wide eight-lane corridor, assuming some traffic projections that are never going to happen here in this community. So they backed off and created a six-lane roadway. But they're all travel lanes. There's no explicit carve-out for my multimodal for transit. And my sense was, at the end of the day, that what has been called a compromise was a compromise design, may have been a convenient political solution, but it still did not constitute good urban planning. And that's the reason I voted against it. I had a group and have a group of four U of A architects and urban planners, people out of the College of Architecture, who do this stuff for a living, who are willing to step up to the plate and over the course of the summer work with the Citizens Task Force and the engineers on the project and try and create a corridor that more closely reflected what we've heard from the community over and over and over again through public meetings since this design process began. Create a sense of place, create a destination, create some place that people will want to come and stay and not simply drive through. Not spend $71 million on a wider chunk of asphalt.
There are a lot of people on that Citizens Task Force who are really looking for some finality in this. They want to see it move ahead, especially business owners in that stretch who've been unable to make long-term decisions about what's happening. Is it bad to be moving ahead with a decision that is a bit of a compromise from everybody?
I think the decision was bad. I think that the compromise was political expediency. I do not think it's good urban planning. And Dylan, we're going to have to live with this decision in this community for decades. And the fallout on the surrounding areas, I think, is going to be irreversible. So I felt that it was wise and necessary to give this group of architects until September, work over the summer with the task force. Another 4 months wasn't going to kill anybody. And let's see if we could bring this thing back in line with what the community has been asking for. And quite frankly, there's a credibility issue now. And the RTA is going to have to go back to the voters for a reauthorization. And frankly, so is the county, because there's $25 million of county money in this. They're going to be going back for bonding, and so is the city. And if the message to the community, the broad community, realize this was not just one or two neighborhoods who were complaining about this. These were also business owners along Broadway who were complaining, saying, "Don't shut me down." the survivors in this thing were a big bank, a big law firm, and a big corporation, and the losers are the small local businesses that we say we support. So I think that the credibility issue could come back to be something that the RTA, the county, and the city regret having made this decision, I think prematurely.
Is there something about the way this design is moving ahead with six lanes that would preclude us from at some point in the future taking two of those lanes and dedicating them to transit?
No, there isn't, but it's not necessarily, well, 2 points. Number one, it's not necessarily about the number of lanes, it's about the cross width. And one night I was walking home, I live around Campbell and Grant area, and I measured late at night Campbell Avenue right around Banner Hospital. It's 96 feet. That includes six lanes, it includes turn lanes, it includes medians, it includes a bike lane. That is 96 feet compared to about 125 feet on the Broadway corridor. That 30-foot difference is businesses. It is the buffer to residential areas. It's parking and access to small local businesses. That's the notion that we were trying to put forward to say, look, this isn't about the number of lanes, it's about the width of the street, and we really need to be spending $71 million to build something that we don't need based on traffic counts, that we're going to eliminate the tax base, that you need RTA to pay for your own projects, and that the community clearly has not asked for. And I just think it was a bad decision.
I guess it's a bit of a theoretical question, especially now, but did we sort of miss the boat back when voters rejected running a light rail line down the middle of Broadway all the way to the east side? That's something that none of these current plans would accommodate doing at any point in the future based on their designs, right?
Well, the current one can, and it could have still been accommodated with the redesign that I'm proposing. A couple of issues with that, though, and I guess the most significant one is the funding. And so, you know, where are those dollars going to come from? And is that the correct corridor? I mean, that's a broader question. Is that the correct corridor for light rail or for a streetcar? I guess I would argue that there are others. If we are going to do that, and if there are federal dollars available, I think there are other corridors that might make more sense. For instance, up Miracle Mile, perhaps up Campbell, maybe out towards the airport. I'm not sure Broadway is the one, because quite honestly, one of the arguments in favor of doing that is that you're going to catalyze new commercial development, and Broadway's already built out.
And it's sort of a related question. Our esteemed engineer here, Tom Fairbanks, wants to note if we missed the boat on trying to build an east-west freeway quite a long time ago, that would have perhaps dealt with some of these traffic issues that we're seeing on arterial streets.
We are widening Grant, and today Grant has gridlock. We already widened Speedway. It now flows fairly nicely most of the time. We do not have gridlock on Broadway, and what we have just done is we have said we are going to create a raceway to a bottleneck, and that bottleneck is the confluence of 4th and Toole and Congress and Broadway, a quarter of a mile west of where this Broadway expansion is occurring. It makes no sense at all to create six lanes of traffic, speed people up, and create gridlock a half a mile, a quarter mile to the west.
Well, won't the extension of downtown links, if we, that project is slowly moving ahead, won't that accommodate some of that traffic and maneuver
exactly
it around downtown?
That's exactly what I was going to say. The downtown links is going to help. It's a bypass to downtown, and so that'll ameliorate it somewhat. But it still doesn't argue in favor of overbuilding the corridor for 23 hours out of the day when there are other ways to do it. And we didn't explore those other ways sufficiently, in my opinion.
So what else is on your topping your list of burning issues right now, other than what's going on with Broadway?
From a transportation standpoint?
Well, just everything you're dealing with over at the city.
Well, I think the top drawer item is the budget, and we started this fiscal year with a $43 million deficit, and with
a projected deficit for next year, right?
That's right. Yeah, and for the fiscal year that's going to begin on July 1st, and through a lot of hard work on the part of the city manager, on the part of the department heads, on the part of the mayor and the council, we have trimmed that down. We've done a lot of restructuring. There have been unfilled vacancies that are going to remain unfilled. And we're going to wind up with a structurally balanced budget for the first time since I started doing this back in 2009. And that's from an operations standpoint. It does not take into consideration the capital needs that we have, and that'll be a conversation we have going forward. But with Fitch Rating Agency dropping our bond rating last year, saying that you guys got to get your act together, no more one-time fixes, you can't keep pushing debt forward, and you got to get your arms around things like your transit costs, we took a good step forward in this budget year, and looking forward to next, then we can start talking about how we're going to fund some of the capital needs.
Tucson, for a good number of years, at least 4 or 5 years, did use a lot of those one-time fixes, selling off bits of property, sort of maneuvering numbers around on a spreadsheet to make them add up properly in a lot of ways. And you're saying we're getting a little bit beyond doing that sort of thing.
We are beyond it. We have to be beyond it because the rating agencies told us last that we're onto that gig. We, the rating agencies, Fitch dropped our rating. The other ones have us on a negative outlook. And so being on a negative outlook for the people who are going to charge you money for borrowing money, for taking on debt, which we will need for the capital investments we're going to have to get involved with, those are the people you're going to have to make believers. And I think with this budget cycle, we are a step further in that direction. I have encouraged the city manager to re-engage with Fitch and the other rating agencies and say, hey, take a look at us now after we pass this budget, and we haven't done it yet, but we'll do it. Hopefully we'll do it in June. Take another look at us, and hopefully they'll take that look, and they'll get our rating back up to where it was last year before they dropped us down.
All right. We have to take a quick break for some very important messages here on the Buckmaster Show. As always, on Friday, it's Rock and Roll Friday. And because I'm guest hosting for Bill, I get to choose the music this weekend. So I went back and dug up some great old Tucson bands. And this is The Sidewinders with a desert rock classic, Witch Doctor.
Have what it takes to be a dog's best friend, or maybe you prefer a cat who'll rule the roost. Either way, you can find your ideal pet during PetSmart's National Adoption Weekend, Friday, May 13th to Sunday, May 15th. The Humane Society of Southern Arizona will have the most adorable animals you've ever seen at PetSmart on Broadway and Pantano, and PetSmart at River and Orange Grove. $25 adoptions for adult animals, $50 adoptions for pets 6 months and under. Licensing fees may apply. Learn more about the Humane Society of Southern Arizona at hssaz.org.
Hey, we're at this incredible event put on by who else but Arizona Party Rental. Everybody who's anybody is here. Aren't you?
John Lewis.
You're
Janos Wilder.
I know that face.
Don Pooley.
Hey there.
Dave Barry.
Great to see you.
Hey, it's Ryan Jeffries.
Thanks for coming.
I'm Ryan Hansen.
Hey, I'm really glad you're here.
Brenda Reiner.
You look familiar.
Dave Fitzsimmons.
Gosh, it's great to see you.
Chris Edwards.
Hey, come on in.
John Feeney.
I didn't know you were coming.
Joseph Blair.
You're
Bill Viner.
Hey, how you doing?
Bill Hussey.
I know that face.
Bruce Beek.
Aren't you?
Bob Logan.
Hey, this is great. My neighbor's here.
Dane Wall.
Hey, Ken, look who's here.
Hey, it's Gilbert. Gilbert Luna, our director of operations. He's incredible. So good to see you. How you doing, Gilbert?
I'm doing great. Hey, Ken, looks like we did it again. Another 5-star event.
Man, wait until everybody finds out what we have in the works, like our Monteverdi Grill. It's a gourmet kitchen on wheels, a 5-star restaurant. It's incredible. And our new high-tech selfie photo booth. Wow. It will be a hit at any special event. Learn more online at ArizonaPartyRental.net.
This is Bill Buckmaster with some exciting news. You could win a $1,000 or a $500 travel voucher to one of 16 nonstop destinations from Tucson International Airport in the Travel Smart with TUS contest. Register for free through Tucson International Airport's Facebook or Twitter pages, or go to the website travelsmarttus.com. Good luck. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. The Regional Transportation Authority is funding new sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and bike lanes across the region to enhance our regional mobility and safety. The 20-year plan also includes roadway improvement projects and transit service enhancements to get you where you want to go. The RTA continues to deliver its promise to you to make our region a better place to live, work, and play. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. Learn more at rtamobility.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
What if you could see tomorrow? Biosphere 2. Find out why visitors journey here from all over to explore future life on our planet. Guided tours take you inside and behind the scenes of this fascinating 21st century research experiment. Now, experience our new What If interactive event series every Saturday at this must-see wonder of the world. At Biosphere 2, you will see tomorrow.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to the Bill Buckmaster Show on AM 1030, KVOI, The Voice. As always, if you have questions or comments, please call in at 790-2040, and we'll put you on the live line, get you on the air, get your voice heard. Joining me on short notice, I'm Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com, sitting in for Bill. He's on a much-deserved vacation, escaping the heat a little bit this week. Is one of our great TucsonSentinel.com reporters, Paul Ingram. Welcome, Paul.
Hi, everybody.
And on the live line, speaking of the live line, is Councilman Steve Kozacek, who was just running down his take on what's going on with the Broadway widening and the RTA. And taking a step onto a sort of different topic, Steve, there are a whole lot of things going on relating to city council elections right now. One of your Democratic colleagues, Karen Ulick, just announced that she won't run for re-election when her term is up in a couple of years, so that people can start laying the groundwork if they feel like they should take that task on. There are also some people who have begun circulating petitions trying to put term limits on both the mayor and council, and I was wondering what your take on that is. I haven't had a chance to ask you yet.
Well, on the term limits piece?
Yeah.
Or Karen?
Well, both, but especially on the term limits thing, because that would at some point affect you and your service on the council.
Yeah, sure. First of all, with respect to Karen's decision, I absolutely understand it. She's in the midst of fostering and adopting a couple of young kids. She's got a wonderful job, very time-consuming and rewarding job with Sympatico. Our new continuum of care for social services and healthcare services here in this region.
Like just about everybody on the council, you and Karen, you all have outside employment because it doesn't really pay all that much, despite it being such a time-consuming task.
It is, if you do it right. When I first began this, a then sitting council member who's no longer on the council told me he had it down pat and he was getting it done with 16 hours a week. You don't do this job in 16 hours a week if you do it correctly. I mean, we tackle some pretty fundamentally important issues. And so I understand Karen's decision. I totally understand it based on her circumstances. This is not an easy job. But on the other hand, it's not something people should be doing for careers, which sort of segues into the term limits question. Do I think two terms is reasonable? Actually, I do not. I think that this particular initiative is a desperate effort by the Pima County GOP to once again try and make themselves relevant. And two terms is about the time you're really starting to get a hold of the issues, understand the groundwork, have developed relationships both in the community and with staff. I think if you want to limit people to two-year terms, then to two four-year terms, you're really turning the management and operation of the city over to staff. And I don't think that's healthy. They're unelected. They're not accountable. And I frankly hold them to task quite regularly for the 20 questions game where you're asking questions and they, you know, he who holds the information has the power, and yeah, sometimes you have to drag it out of them. So I don't think the term limits make sense. I also don't hear any clamor for it out in the community. I understand there is a bit of infighting going on between this group and the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, who's pushing for the ward-only election also, that they feel like this competes with their effort. At least the Armando Rios group is willing to go out and do their own legwork and try and get their own signatures. They've got a long way to go.
Those are the folks pushing the term limits initiative.
The term limit.
I don't have that pulled up in front of me, but my recollection was that it was limit mayor and council members to three terms in total.
It's two for any one office, and so you could go two council.
So you could run for mayor in your next election, and you would be okay under that.
That's right, but the mayoral seat's not up in 17, and so effectively they're saying that I and Fimbres, and it was going to be Karen, would not have been eligible to run in 2017. You know, setting all that aside, though, we do have term limits. They're called elections, and if people want to bring a quality candidate to the table and run a good campaign and challenge my record or anybody's record, bring that on. But The solution of term limits is a solution looking for a problem, and I don't think we've got one right now if you bring quality candidates to the table. When I started this, there was a Republican mayor. I ran as a Republican and beat an incumbent Democrat not too long back. There were three sitting Republicans on the council. And frankly, this also begs the question of the challenge in the Ninth Circuit about the way we do our elections right now.
And we don't know what's going to end up happening with that.
No, we don't, but the Ninth Circuit has agreed to hear the course en banc there, and that says three things to me. Number one, it says that they feel there's merit in the case, or they would have just gone with the original panel, and that's the most important thing that it says to me. I also believe that the way we elect our council members right now really reflects the way we govern. And that is, we elect council members, we choose the candidate by ward. Each of the six of us, have some fairly ward-centric issues that we deal with. They're, you know, zoning issues or constituencies.
Like Broadway for you.
Well, Broadway was a bigger regional issue, I would argue, but yeah, there were constituents involved in it as well. But, you know, simple zoning issues are things that, we use that dreaded word, we'll defer generally to another council member because they've been dealing with it with that ward-centric issue. But we elect people on a citywide basis, and when we're talking about regional issues, such as our water policy, such as our budget, such as public safety, those we do take a broader view of, and we have a much more engaged and wider conversation. I really believe that level of that manner of governance is reflected in the way that we do our elections right now. And I think that people, frankly, Dylan, they have supported it time and again. They have rejected ward only time and again. And I have already been public in saying I think we ought to wait for the court, wait for them to make the decision. I think we will win in court, and I think that they will sustain our current method of elections, and there's no reason to spend $300,000 putting something on the ballot that people have rejected and that the court has said what we're doing is already legal.
We've got a caller on the live line who's been waiting patiently for a couple of minutes. Matthew, you have a question for Councilman Steve Kozacik?
Yeah, I think he just answered it with regards to the lawsuit and whether or not they're going to refer it to a language to be on the ballot.
Just my opinion, though, Matthew. The rest of the council and the mayor could say, let's put something on in November, and that something could either be ward only, or it could be the hybrid ward, whereas ward plus two council members who run at large, Or we could refer to the ballot, everybody runs at large in both the primary and the general. So there are a lot of different ways we could go with this.
Yeah, are there, besides that issue, are there any other issues that you portend will show up that the council will refer to the ballot, whether it affects the budget, future budgets, or revenues, or anything? Thank you. Bye.
Sure. I don't think that there's much appetite for loading this ballot up with financial issues. Those would be changing the property tax limits on primary or secondary, or increasing our ability to, by charter, to increase and earmark sales taxes. And I think there are a couple of reasons for that. Number one is, and this, my opinion, is that we need to pass this budget and demonstrate to the taxpayers that we're handling your money in a fiscally responsible manner before we go to the ballot and say, oh, by the way, we want some more of it, or at least the ability to ask you for more of it. So that's one. And the second thing is simply the length of this ballot. It's going to be a real long ballot. There's going to be federal and there's going to be state issues. You're going to have county board of supervisors running. So this is going to be quite
city issues end up way at the bottom of all of those.
That's right.
Physically on the ballot, we come in last.
That's right. And so these are fundamentally important enough issues so that I believe they deserve a greater focus than winding up on page 12 of a lengthy ballot and people just giving them kind of short shrift, if anything.
So TucsonSentinel.com reporter Paul Ingram has a question for you, Steve.
Hey, okay. Steve, I wanted to ask you, you've been kind of doing with immigrant welcoming events and really kind of pushing for that. Is there any sort of sense of kind of blowback from that, or are you hearing good things about doing those kinds of greetings?
The groups that we were, first of all, how much time? I don't want to.
Well, you've got a few minutes.
Okay, all right. The groups that we have been dealing with out of my office and I've been dealing with were the kids and largely mothers, but the families who were coming here through Central America, fleeing, not simply coming here because they want to work in the agriculture industry, but fleeing some pretty horrendous conditions in largely Honduras and El Salvador. They are people who arguably and are making arguments in front of the courts right now should be considered for asylum status based on legitimate fear of their life if they were to return home. Those are the people that we have been working with. They are here legally by the time they get to us, and we are simply helping them get to their next of kin, whether it's locally. Most of them are not local. Most of them are moving on to another state where their family is to continue through their deportation hearings and make those arguments for asylum. Once people understand that that's who we're working with and the nature of the conditions from which they're fleeing, I think, most of the people I've been hearing from are saying, good for you. The old principle, preach the gospel always and when necessary use words, and I think this is that.
Sure, and from that sense, I mean, there's also the unaccompanied minors who are placed in Tucson and placed in areas around. I mean, as far as the city has dealt with, is that kind of continuing, or are there places, locations in Tucson that might actually be kind of hosting more unaccompanied minors?
There is a place in Tucson that we did a special exemption rezoning for to accommodate over on Miracle Mile. I was concerned about it, about the conditions in which the kids were being held, even to the point where I contacted Homeland Security and toured the place about 3 or 4 months ago. And I will tell you that the people who are running that place have nothing but compassion for the kids, and that they're not warehoused. They're taught. There's educational options while they're there for both language and your regular math and English kinds of skills. Those kinds of things that you get in regular public school. It is not a warehouse, and the people running it under the auspices of Homeland Security are treating those kids very well. So, yeah, they're still coming. The numbers are down somewhat, but they're still coming on a regular basis. It is not predictable. The Border Patrol could show up either at the home that we have in Midtown housing the families, or at this other center that we're talking about for the unaccompanied minors. They could show up on a Thursday afternoon with five families in the one house or 20 kids in the other, or you may not see them for a week. So it's really a non-unpredictable situation.
So Border Patrol are actually the ones bringing the kids to these facilities now instead of Health and Human Services?
And that's been the way it was all along. The groups that we've been dealing with at what's called the Elitist House with the women and their kids, this was the group of people who originally were showing up at the Greyhound bus depot. And we, through Catholic Community Services, found a house in Midtown, and now Border Patrol is bringing them directly there. And they're perfectly willing to do it, and there's a good working relationship with them. And it's after they have already been processed through all the CBP processes, and they turn them over with papers, with travel papers, to get to next of kin to continue on through their deportation hearings or asylum hearings.
All right. Councilman Steve Kozacik, thank you so much for joining us today for the Friday Focus interview on the Buckmaster Show. We very much appreciate it.
Thanks, Dylan. Thanks, Paul.
And
thanks,
we will be right back with the Reporters Roundtable with Paul Ingram and Jeremy Duda from the Arizona Capital Times will join us after these important messages. And because it is Rock and Roll Friday, we're going to listen to a little bit of the Reverend Al Perry.
Is just as remorseful as an autumn denied. The colored leaves fall. Winter is long. Winter has no snow. And summer is painful when the wind won't blow.
Business owners and managers upgrade your workforce through training customized to meet your needs. Pima Community College offers affordable, specialized training for companies large and small. Instruction is delivered how, when, and where you want it, whether online, at your business, or a customized combination. Pima Community College instructors make training relevant with a focus on today's real-world business needs and measurable success. Learn more at 206-6593, 206-6593.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. We have an entire section devoted to the Old West and its heritage. Contributors include Wyatt Earp historian Scott Dyke and hiking Apacheria's Jerry Egan. We also look back at Old West newspapers and feature a column, This Day in Old West History. It is Old West News from a different perspective. The Southern Arizona News Examiner. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
Vero Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Vero Amori's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Vero Amori is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Vero Amori, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amori on the web at veroamori.com. If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. This year, the Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 10 years of delivering projects across Pima County. More than 730 multimodal projects help you reach your destinations. Thanks to our partners in the public for collaboration, participation, and support of the RTA plan. By delivering both mobility and economic benefits to our communities, the RTA truly is making a difference. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident, and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
You need cooling, baby. I am fooling. I'm gonna send you back to school. Oh, baby, way down inside, woman, you need love.
Baby, welcome baby, back to the Buckmaster love. Show. On this, it's a. I just realized it's Friday the 13th, and I'm Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. I would end up guest hosting for Bill, who's on vacation on Friday the 13th, I suppose. We were just listening to a little bit of what most of you probably recognized as Robert Plant, but most people do not know that one of the most amazing guitarists ever was Tucsonan. That was Reiner playing guitar along with Robert Plant on Whole Lotta Love. And because this is a Rock and Roll Friday, I've gone back and dug up some great old Tucson bands from the late 80s, early 90s, and it was an amazing period in Tucson music. It's time for the Reporters Roundtable, as we do every Friday, and joining me is my colleague, TucsonSentinel.com's Paul Ingram, and on the phone, gonna run us down what's been going on up in the Phoenix area at the legislature and on the governor's desk is Jeremy Duda from the Arizona Capital Times. Welcome, Jeremy. Thank you.
No problem.
And Paul, we've got some national news about immigration and border enforcement that's probably going to have a pretty significant impact here in Arizona.
Yeah, yesterday Reuters released a story that they had documentation showing that the Department of Homeland Security was going to start doing immigration raids again. This is following on a program that they had decided to do in January and that kind of follow on to actually go and find people who had come into the United States after 2014.
And in that earlier set of raids, that mostly was out not in Arizona, correct?
No, the largest raids were in Texas, but there were no raids, as far as I know, except for one or two, but they weren't really connected with this program that were here in Arizona, mostly in Phoenix. The largest push has really been through Texas and then also in Georgia.
And these are not the sort of employer-related raids where La Migra shows up at some chicken packing plant or something like that. This is going to people's houses early in the morning, knocking on their doors, and that.
Exactly.
That's what they've been doing in
exactly.
other states.
Largely. I mean, in some cases, they were never workplace raids like they used to do in the late 90s and early 2000s. Instead, these were looking for individuals who'd come to the United States after January 1st, 2014, who had come up through mostly the Rio Grande Valley and who then also had their court adjudication, their full cases had already been finished. And so they were actually supposed to be deported already, according to DHS officials. And so they sent ICE agents specifically to go on knock on people's doors and begin looking for people.
It sounds like a pretty complex process.
It's a very complex process. I mean, the immigration system, just to move somebody through from asylum claims, when, especially when they come up through the Rio Grande Valley, it deals with several agencies. It takes a lot of time, and there's a lot of sort of slippages in terms of how the agencies deal with different people depending on how their case is done. There's also a really large backlog in terms of the cases. But these cases were ones that the DHS had decided were finalized, and then they actually began picking people up. Though, as they did that, lawyers for some of the people actually were able to intercede and actually stop. In one case, I believe in Texas, they were actually able to get the guy off the plane before he was sent back to Guatemala.
So, Jeremy, what's the latest? Are we actually going to have an election on Tuesday? There's been some legal maneuvering the last few days going on with our special election about these two propositions. What's up?
Indeed, we are going to have an election on Tuesday. Now, Tom Ryan, a Chandler attorney, he filed a filed his paperwork with the Attorney General's office asking for that to be postponed because Secretary of State Michelle Reagan failed to send out, I believe, about 200,000 publicity pamphlets that go out before these kinds of elections, which she said was due to a vendor error. Now, Attorney General Brnovich said he seemed pretty incensed about
it. He had a great phrase about this.
Yeah, used some language you don't usually hear from an elected official during a press conference, but said there's really no remedy to, canceling or postponing this election, that there's about 700,000 ballots that have already gone in. This would be disenfranchising them. So the election is going to go forward, although the Attorney General's office says it is going to investigate what happened at the Secretary of State's office, including why those pamphlets did not go out and why it took so long for them to tell anyone about it.
So that saga will continue to play out a little bit.
Yeah, and I suspect if Prop 123 passes on Tuesday, we're going to hear a lot more from Tom Ryan and other opponents of this about what happened there.
What are the other the legislature essentially wound up their business last week, but there are bills that hit the governor's desk this week, and perhaps some still sitting there awaiting a signature or veto. What are the big takeaways from this week?
Well, he's signed a lot of bills. He still has, I think, more than 100 bills left to act on, but he's acted on the majority of what has been sent him. He's had some interesting signings, some affecting Tucson down there. There's a bill aimed at kind of further preempting some of the local firearms ordinances that Tucson has passed, which, of course, very much tick in the craw of some of the lawmakers up here in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
He's had some interesting vetoes as well. He vetoed a bill from House Speaker Gowan that would make it easier to create these special taxing districts called community facilities districts that have a lot of ramifications for proposed development out near Benson.
And there was a bill about water over there in the San Pedro Valley as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, a couple of bills on water, and two more interesting vetoes on that. One of those, of course, would have allowed some cities, and I believe Cochise and Yuma counties, to basically opt out of water requirements that allow developments to show they have a proper water supply for their development.
So they could, if that hadn't have been vetoed, they could have built whatever they want, whenever, however much?
Essentially, yeah, and there's been a lot of concern about that all session, and Governor Ducey, he put the crosshairs on that one pretty quickly. He publicly proclaimed to us during a kind of an impromptu press conference the other day his intention of vetoing that, which, the governor rarely speaks out about how he's going to act on legislation until he's done it, so he certainly wanted to make a point about that one, said it would endanger Arizona's groundwater planning that has been in place since about 1980.
Were there any surprises for you or anybody up there in the Cap Times newsroom about how he what stance he ended up taking on some of these bills? Anything that stood out?
Not entirely surprised on the water thing. I think we all took notice of it because it's such a prominent and controversial issue, but he has spent a lot of time, especially since we've had all these drought conditions in California, a lot of focus on water over the last couple of years. He's always been very emphatic about Arizona's planning. And I think there was maybe some surprise over the community facilities district veto, because that was very much a pet project of the speaker. But certainly kind of makes sense, his rationale for vetoing that, and why someone like Governor Ducey wouldn't like that.
What's your take on how this election now that we are definitely having an election on Tuesday. Of course, people have been voting for weeks already, but are these propositions going to pass? Gaze into your crystal ball.
The expectation is probably yes. I mean, getting Prop 12—real quickly addressing Prop 124, you know, this public safety employee pension reform, very non-controversial. Everyone's on board. I don't think there's anyone publicly opposing this at all. Prop 123, of course, a bit more controversial, and certainly in the last few weeks, there's been kind of an increasing sentiment that the Yes on 123 campaign is concerned. You've seen kind of a change in their rhetoric. Some people feel like this thing might be in trouble. But I think the general expectation is this thing is going to pass, even if it passes narrowly. I mean, if you look at these campaigns, the Vote Yes side has, you know, $4-4.5 million at least, and, you know, obviously going very heavy on TV advertising. The No campaign has, about $8,000-9,000, you know, some social media and very boisterous state treasurer making the rounds opposing it. It's kind of hard to compete with the, $4-4.5 million and the bully pulpit of the governor's office.
Down here in Tucson, we've seen a whole lot of people come out against it who are in some ways breaking some longstanding alliances that they've had with people who are sort of in the educational establishment. We've seen, people really say that they think it's a kind of a ticking time bomb.
Sure, and this has been very controversial in the Democratic world. I mean, generally, Democrats are always very supportive of anything that is going to put more money into education. It's been the rallying cry for years. But they do have a number of concerns about this, there's some triggers in there that allow, under certain conditions, allow the legislature to freeze or even reduce K-12 spending based on economic conditions or how much of the general fund is taken up for K-12 education. Obviously, they're very concerned about the fact that these schools that were suing in this lawsuit that prompted this entire settlement, you know, they were insisting that they were owed a certain amount of money for inflation funding. This only gives them about 70%, I believe, of that funding. And I know in some quarters there's certainly a sentiment, and I think Tucson Senator Steve Farley was saying this to me the other day, that among some Democrats there's kind of a sentiment of wanting to reject this because it is something created and promoted by Governor Ducey and the Republican-controlled legislature.
So it couldn't possibly be any good because of that, right?
Yeah, and they want, a lot of people want this, they don't like the settlement, and they want the court place to continue, court case to continue stringing out, which is, of course, very much a roll of the dice for both sides. You know, the schools, school groups could get 100% of what they want.
Some people have said
they
will
lose and get, you know, very little of what they want if the legislature were to win in its argument for how much, for the much lower amount of inflation funding that the legislature says it owes.
Some people have said that there will be a lawsuit over 123 if it passes.
There very well may be. There's some concerns raised largely by Treasurer DeWitt about largely about the Enabling Act, the federal legislation that allowed Arizona to become a state, and the way that governs the use of the land trust. There may be a couple other issues, but that seems to be kind of the predominant one. Now, they amended that in 1999, I believe, in Congress in a way that some of our Arizona members of Congress say kind of gives the state the all-clear to do this. Some people disagree. I think it's definitely very likely that we'd see some litigation on that if it passes on Tuesday.
All right. You've been listening to the Reporters Roundtable here on the Buckmaster Show. Thank you very much, Jeremy Duda from the Arizona Capital Times and Paul Ingram from TucsonSentinel.com. We will be right back with Weekend Watch.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm a passionate traveler visiting more than 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 5 airlines flying nonstop to 16 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Business owners and managers upgrade your workforce through training customized to meet your needs. Pima Community College offers affordable, specialized training for companies large and small. Instruction is delivered how, when, and where you want it, whether online, at your business, or a customized combination. Pima Community College instructors make training relevant with a focus on today's real-world business needs and measurable success. Learn more at 206-6593, 206-6593.
What if you could see tomorrow? Biosphere 2. Find out why visitors journey here from all over to explore future life on our planet. Guided tours take you inside and behind the scenes of this fascinating 21st century research experiment. Now, experience our new What If interactive event series every Saturday at this must-see wonder of the world. At Biosphere 2, you will see tomorrow.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona is setting the standard for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. Being accredited with BBB means that your business holds the same high standards and consumers can count on you to keep your word. Hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans use our website every month. Make sure they find your business. Call us today to discuss the many benefits of BBB accreditation at 888-6161 or go to our website at bbb.org/Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River Walk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
Every year, eager travelers journey to Europe to experience the Yuletide season at its very best. With the glittering backdrop of winter white hilltops and extravagantly decorated cities, get swept up in the enchantment that's in the air. Let's not forget the most magical part of all, Europe's famous Christmas markets, renowned for their festive atmosphere, great food and drink, and handcrafted gifts. Experience the magic of the holidays aboard an Ama Waterways river cruise. Call Bon Voyage Travel to plan your Christmas market cruise and save up to 40%. Bon Voyage Travel, 797-1110.
As always on the Buckmaster Show, that music means it's time for Weekend Watch with Matt Russell, the award-winning publicist and food and beverage columnist for Inside Tucson Business. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson. Coming up are the Memorial Day weekend. It's the Silver City Bike Blues and Bikes Festival, and for a complete listing, the many things to do and great places to stay, such as Georgetown Cabins, the Gila Springs Ranch, visit southwestnewmexico.org. And Matt, things are getting a little bit warm out there. Do you have any suggestions about how we can beat the heat?
I do, and Rock and Roll Friday, what a great backdrop to talk about rock and roll cocktails. You know, the mercury is expected to reach triple digits today, as we know, and there's a cocktail at 47 Scott that just screams summer survival, and it is my pick today. It's called the Summertime in Tucson, and it's made with Whiskey Del Bac single malt, St. Germain elderflower liqueur, fresh lemon, club soda, and muddled thyme. It's an herbaceous summertime refresher for sure, which I think would pair nicely, Dylan, with their beet and arugula salad, which is on special for happy hour. I say chill out at 47 Scott today to get the weekend underway.
That sounds like a one to put on the list. I was driving over here, and it was getting a little bit warm in the car already. This afternoon, it's got to be even warmer.
That's right, and you're a Scotch guy, so you'd love that cocktail.
Indeed. What else do you have for us?
Well, let me be the first to wish you a happy National Burger Month, Dylan. And our friends at Zin Burger are celebrating all month long with their Zinful Moments program. Now, check it out. All you have to do is snap a selfie in your ultimate Zinful Moment, post on Instagram or Facebook using the hashtag Zinful Moment, and one lucky winner is going to get free Zin Burger for a year. I'm definitely doing that this weekend. Now, inquiring minds want to know, Dylan, do you have a Zinful Moment that you want to share publicly?
You know, I'm going to take a pass on that. I don't think I'll be posting that anywhere online. Perhaps me poised with one of those cocktails, or maybe a Zin Burger itself, and you know, a nice plate of fries to go with it.
Couldn't do better.
And what do you have coming up in your next column for Inside Tucson Business?
Yeah, well, speaking of refreshing cocktails, some local bartenders are creating new cocktails that are perfect for these warmer months, and I've put together kind of a roundup of these hydration libations, and they're all in this week's edition of Inside Tucson Business. We've got some great mixologists in this town working very hard to libate us all season long, and I am ready, Dylan.
Can you give us a sneak peek at one of those?
Absolutely. The Kansas City Ice Water is an iconic beverage that goes back decades, and Matthew Martinez, down at Oban, he's put together kind of an international look at it called the Tokyo City Ice Water, which is kind of his kind of global take on the Kansas City Ice Water. A lot of fun, very delicious, very refreshing.
That sounds pretty tasty as well. Thank you very much, Matt Russell, for your ever-reliable weekend watch. I'm Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. I've been sitting in for Bill this week, and today, and I would like to thank our guests today, Councilman Steve Kozacek, my colleague, Paul Ingram from TucsonSentinel.com, Jeremy Duda from the Cap Times.